All right, there we go. We are now live. So this is Horror Makes Us Happy live chat number 12 with Ms. Kathy Koja. Welcome.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. I like to be number 12. I envy who's ever number 13, but I'm good at number 12, too.
And it's the 12th. 12 on the 12th. Eh?
That's right. Okay, that has some kind of mystic significance. We're going to keep that in mind.
As all numerology fans out there right now are like, see?
I told you.
Right. Well, before we started recording, we briefly were chatting about the common theme of the interview that we did with you, God, like 3 years ago now, 4 years ago. In your case, the common theme, we kept talking about strong voices, strong narrative voices. And to be honest, at the time, I wasn't completely clear on what you had meant by that, so we kind of spent a lot of time talking about that instead of focusing on what it is that the strong voices were trying to tell you and then trying to see if we could find a common theme in that. So we wanted to have these live chats for a dual purpose. One is to invite guests back so they can share what they're currently working on, and then also maybe talk about the common theme that we had in the previous call, and, you know, has that shown up in your work since then, or has it shown up in the media that you have enjoyed since then? I believe there was one thing that you did say that it has shown up in that you would like to chat about a little bit.
I would, and let's start out by talking about Maggie Gyllenhaal's The Bride, which I think got unfairly pilloried. And what I really liked about it, all I had heard, and I try not to really, I never watch trailers anymore because too much.
Yeah.
But I went into it as cold as I could go, and I'm a big Frankenstein the novel fan, and I just watched the last Frankenstein movie, which was good, but I thought this, I really liked this because it was such a strong directorial voice from the jump when you start out. And, you know, spoilers for folks who have not seen it yet, but when you start out being addressed by the really angry dead Mary Shelley, it's like, all right, all bets are off. I'm into this. I want to see what is going to happen next.
It starts off with narration from deceased Mary Shelley.
Deceased Mary Shelley is like fourth wall breaking, talking to you. Right.
I like it.
It's, and the assurance of that voice continues all throughout the movie. Things happen, things, she takes risks with silly things sometimes where you can see that she is a fan of the material across a lot of different genres, because Frankenstein has been made into a lot of different films and a lot of different, she riffs on Young Frankenstein at one point.
Nice.
It's very witty. It's very strong. And I would rather watch something like that where you can see the director or the writer or anybody or the musician took some risks and was willing to say, this is what I want to say about this piece of material. This is what I want to do. Rather than the horrible feeling that there was a committee of editors or, you know, producers or whatever, standing over that person's shoulder saying, don't do that. People aren't going to like you. You know, could
people
you just...
People don't want this. People want Boris Karloff throwing a little girl in a river.
Right. That's what we need. Right. And could you make her taller? You know, I mean, stuff like that where you go, I want to see what this person thinks. There's a... The original Danish production TV show was called The Kingdom. Have you seen it? It's... is Lars von Trier. Mm-hmm. Okay. And there were two seasons of it, and I had been a friend.
Did a show. Okay.
He did, and my friend had nagged me for, she's like, just watch it, dude. You will, yeah, it's crazy pants. Just watch it. And I'm like, TV show. I don't want a TV show. But I did watch it. And it's so bananas that she was right. There isn't anything else like it. But it's, again, it's a super strong voice. And what was so exciting is that there was supposed to be a third season, and then for various reasons there was not, and then many years went by and some of the principals died in the original two seasons, but he came back with a third season. And what he did, I will not spoil it, but what he did literally made me laugh out loud because it was so clever and so well done to address that gap, which everyone is sitting there, anyone who had watched the first two and said, number one, how are you going to pull this rabbit out of a hat for the third time, really? But he was so assured in what he was doing, and he knew exactly what he wanted to do. And it's a stunner. I have not seen anything like it. There are things in there that will make you laugh, will make you sick, will... It's just... It is, but it's its own thing. It's a very strong voice telling you a particular kind of tale. Mm-hmm. He didn't have any interest, I would imagine, in pleasing, like the pleasing of people was beside the point.
He right. never does. Look at
I was just gonna say, we're talking about Larry.
Sure, sure. And I've
really not in the business of pleasing people. He's in the business of telling his stories.
Exactly. And I don't like everything that he does either. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are things I find unwatchable, but it doesn't matter. He's not thinking, boy, I hope Gabby Goja likes this one. It's like, mm-hmm. I'm gonna do this story. This is what I'm gonna do. If you don't like it, that's on you.
Yeah.
But right, what you said is completely strong and mm-hmm. self assured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like, same as you. I'm not exactly a fan of all of his works, but I do respect the man for that. He is an artist who puts forth something to film as an artist, and he makes no concessions. He says, no, this is my vision. It's going to be like this.
And David Lynch was the same way.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, you're going to see what I want to show you. You know, and I guess there are lots of famous interviews that I've never seen, but of Lynch going, people going, well, and what was that supposed to mean? And he's like, yeah, no. I just don't do that because you a long, long time ago, I don't remember if it was The Cipher or Bad Brains. I was doing a bookstore signing years and years ago when the book first came out, and a woman came up to me and she had a theory about something that had happened in the book. Mm-hmm. And said, was this XYZ? And I said, oh, not at all. It was ABC. And she said, oh, well, I thought that was because, and she had this whole entire theory that was so great.
Everything.
It was so good. And I thought, that's what she got out of it. I had no business saying that to her. I had no business at all saying that. What she had got out of it was due in a large part to what she brought to it.
Mm-hmm.
And because she was able to bring that to it, she got that out of it. And I should have just kept my mouth shut. So I kept my mouth shut after that, forever after.
Yeah, you know, I was going to ask if you changed up your responses after that. And, you know, it's funny that makes me think of, like, the stereotypical meeting your celebrity author fan person words. Hero. And you ask them that question like that, and usually you get the stereotypical answer of, well, what did you think it meant? And, you know, you always poo-poo that. You think that's a shitty answer, but maybe it's the better answer in situations like that because you can gauge it at first. Like, well, what did you think it was? Yes.
Well, exactly. And I could have learned from her if I had kept quiet and been more respectful with her answer. I could have learned, oh, that's something that... The same thing happened again with a much happier response. I was doing a school visit for one of my YA novels. It's called The Blue Mirror, and it's about a girl who's pretty much estranged from her life, and she's making her own graphic novel called The Blue Mirror and, you know, skipping school and going to this cafe. And there's a guy there who is, like, not what he seems, and... You know, she doesn't have a lot of experience, and this guy, we look at him and go, something's wrong, but she doesn't know. And she has this cat. And the kids in the class who had this was like an upper middle school class, and they had read the book, and they had these theories. They had all these theories of what the cat meant and what this guy was really about, and because of this, and did I know that movie? And it was amazing. And they brought everything they had to that book. Yes. And yeah, it was just fantastic. One young woman was going on about how the representation of cats in Egyptian mythology, and she thought this cat in the book was like that because this. I'm like, this is so good. Again, you mind if I tell people? Yes, yeah, what you said. Yes. But yeah, and they re- and they were responding to the voice that was telling them this. They weren't. That's what I like best about young audiences. That's what I really miss about writing YA, is that there's a lot less of, oh, I'm so happy to meet you. You know, I mean, they're nice, but if they don't like something, they will tell you to your face, and they'll say, what'd you do that for? You know, and that's just gold. I mean, the whole point of doing anything, making any kind of art, is making, you know, that effort to communicate. And otherwise, why do it? You know, if I'm writing these things for myself, I don't even need to do anything. I could just write them all in here and call it a short work day, right?
Go through all that problem of publishing stuff and just put it on.
Go through the problem of anything, right? Of, you know, putting on a clean shirt. I just sit there and tell myself stories all day long and just be done
with
it.
Many people do.
And they do, right? Yeah. Some tell stories for all of us, but it seems like they're telling them only for themselves, and not in a good way, right? Not in a...
Are we back to talking about Lars von Trier now?
What films of his did you not like?
I don't know.
I was not a fan of The House That Jack Built. I didn't even finish that. I think we were watching that, and I passed out. I didn't pass out. I closed out like halfway through. I'm like, I can't even deal with this. Too much for me.
I'm trying to think of the last thing that I saw or read that I just put down, and I was reading something, and I won't say who it is, but I was reading somebody's work, and this was not so much a problem with voice as with flow. The way the sentences were put together was so clunky, and so there was no flow. And I couldn't continue. I tried really hard. I couldn't even tell you what the narrative was about at that point, because it was so difficult to try to follow this voice down this, you know, crooked flight of stairs that I don't know what you're doing, and two steps up and you fall down, and then I have to fall down. And it was really hard to stay with that voice because it was so...
That's kind of how... House Jack Built was for me. I felt like it wasn't.
It wasn't, especially with stairs.
I didn't even make it that far. But for me, it was like I didn't feel like it was a movie. It felt like it was an art piece. Mm-hmm. And I'm not 100% positive, but I believe English isn't his first language, which I understand. I respect that. But like, I couldn't take it after a while. It's like, all right, but I've also got a super high bar when it comes to movies. Like Chris will tell you, I don't watch very many movies at all, not just horror, but anything, because I really, really hate feeling like I just wasted 2 hours of my life if I don't love something. And so usually I'll wait until I hear enough people giving something a rave review, and then I'll check something out. And this particular thing, we were just streaming on Friday nights on our Discord server, and I agreed to sit in and just, you know, be social. But after a certain while, it's like, I can't even do this anymore. But yeah.
And if a voice can be a good voice too, but if it's not speaking to you, you know, I mean, there are whole art forms that I can't do opera. I just can't. I've tried. I can't lose myself in it. A part of me is always, you know, going, well, that's quite interesting, you know, or, oh, I really appreciate this. You know, I mean, on the one hand, it's like, but it's every art form put together. It's singing, it's music, it's set design, it's acting, it's all this stuff. But yeah. I don't have the receptors for it.
Yeah.
And I can't. That's why I don't go to the opera, because what's the point? Right. It just goes over my head. Yeah. It misses
you're
absolutely
me. Right there with the analogy of the voice, you know, it has to speak to you. It has to draw you in and basically bring you into a conversation that is the story. And that's one of the things I always notice when judging or just discussing films, like, does it keep you in the moment? Are there any moments where you realize you're watching a film, or you're watching a play, or you're watching an opera? And yeah, like with opera, you know, if it's just not your thing, it can be a great and very well written and effective story, if it's not your thing, it's the voice doesn't speak to you, and you can still recognize that as being something that's good and skillful, but just not like completely being engrossed in it.
Right, and valuable for others. And I feel like that sometimes about very stuff that, like when friends want you to watch something or read something, and you can tell after the first 5 minutes, you know, this is not for me. And then a part of you wonders, it's like a blind date. You're like, why did you think I would like this? What do you think is in this that would resonate with me? And then they always go, well, what'd you think? It's like, that's why not for me is all I can say. I'm not going to, you know, shit on your cupcake, but it's not for me. And I
don't forget to call it icing. You have to shit on your cupcake and call it icing.
Yeah. Or that or nothing. You know, I don't, if you're enjoying something, that's awesome. But the same way when people try to make you like foods that you don't like.
Well, like Chris said a second ago about, you know, I forget the exact wording you used, but it was something about taking you out of the moment. And I think that, like, again, going back to the house that Jack built.
It may as well be the house that Lars built.
You know, there were a lot of moments that took me out of it, but at the same time, kind of talking about that at a meta level, that's coming at it, viewing it as, or expecting to view it as a movie, and that's why I said it didn't seem like a movie to me, it felt like an art piece. And I think that if you were to come at it viewing it as an art piece, maybe you would have been able to stay in that moment, and that's where I lost it, because I couldn't come to it in that on that level, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I saw a film recently, and I'm blocking on the name, but it is completely an art piece, and it's like nothing else. It's so riveting. Some of it is paintings, some of it is, it's like you're watching a sunset in real time. And at first it sounds like, oh my god, this would be like watching paint dry, could this be more boring? But it isn't. It's really full of dread, and it's very beautiful. I couldn't even tell you what it's about other than the experience of watching it. And if I can pull it up here, I will share it. But as you said, I went to it and I did not expect narrative. I didn't expect anything. And I did get narrative. There was narrative in there. Mm-hmm. But I came to it just saying, okay, show me what you got. And I had never seen anything like it. And I tried to meet it on its own terms. And it worked. It worked really well.
I think that's probably the ideal way to go into any story, which, as you were saying about trailers earlier, it's damn near impossible anymore to go into something blind.
Well,
and that's really awful too, because it steals from the narrative too.
I don't mind trailers. I hate it when they do everything in the movie though. Like sometimes I'll watch a movie and will not have watched the trailer, and I go back and watch the trailer, and I'm like, that's the end of the movie right there. What the fuck?
Why did you do that? Right. Yeah. Why did you do that? And for the sake of whatever, or they do things come out in the trailer that would come in the film as a reveal.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, but wait, I already know he has two heads. Oh shit. Oh, I wasn't supposed to know that. Oh no.
Companion.
No it fun.
Could have been, you know, kept a secret that she was a robot, but it kind of showed it in the trailer. So that would have been a great twist. And watching the movie, it seemed like it was supposed to be a twist, but it was all in the trailer. So,
but it was too late. I know. And I don't know that Flap Copy commits the same sins. Flap Copy tries really hard not to. Sometimes it can be so careful that it's vague. But that's a real art, too. Writing Flap Copy is very difficult. Writing a little précis for books.
I've never heard this term. What is Flap Copy?
It's the stuff that's written on the flap.
Like the blurb.
Oh, okay, yeah, the blurb on the back.
Like this stuff. On the inside. Yeah. Right? That tells you the stuff that came from the publisher saying, you know, XYZ. Actually, this is a really great book, too, Puppet.
It's the book trailer.
But and it can be done really beautifully, but it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard to do well.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what else I've read recently that was very strong. Right now, to be honest, I'm reading almost no fiction because I'm writing, and because I prefer strong voices, I don't want to cross them with mine while I'm working. I never do.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, while you're writing fiction, you don't necessarily want to read fiction because, you know, even on a subconscious level, you don't want to find yourself accidentally borrowing something from something you're reading.
Or have it influence what you're doing, you know, in a bad way. Like, oh, I don't want to do that. Yeah, I prefer to, which means my reading time is like half a year. So the other half of the year I'm working on stuff. And a lot of, depending what I'm writing, sometimes I have to do a lot of research. So that takes up a lot of my reading time. But yeah, I'm trying to think of the last thing that I read that really blew me away, but it's been a minute. It's been a minute. Oh, I know what it was, but this is an old book. Because of our current fascism, I've been reading and watching a lot of documentaries and a lot of historical fiction to look at and see how did other people cope with this? How did other societies deal with this? What did they do? How did they get out of it? How did they live within it? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And the film that I saw recently that is just brilliant is a documentary. It won the Oscar this year for Best Doc, Mr. Nobody Against Putin. Oh. And it's about a teacher. His job is to do videography at, it's like a high school, middle school type school in this little city in Russia. And he's like, yeah, our big distinction is we're like one of the most polluted places in the world because of these, you know, fucking copper mines or whatever there is there. But he really loves his city and he loves his job. And he's like the cool teacher and all the kids like want to come and hang out in his room and horse around and have fun. And then they, Russia invades Ukraine and everything changes overnight. And all the teachers are given this mandate saying, it's propaganda time, get busy. And so he has to start filming the kids while they're doing patriotic song, you know, and it starts out just like very confusing for the teachers. They're like, we have to do this plus teach? And then what are we going to do? But it quickly becomes, and obviously we're watching his old footage. We know now what happened and it becomes very, very dark. And it's this guy saying, how can I continue to be a teacher? How can I continue to talk honestly with kids if I'm lying to them? I can't do this. I can't do this. So highly recommended, very highly recommended. And I started reading the Arkady Renko, Martin Crewe Smith's detective series. I had read Gorky Park and I think I'd read the second one, but that's another, I mean, here are these people, and he situates these books in very particular moments in Russian history. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, how do they, here are people who some people collaborated with it, some people ignore it as much as they can. He tries pushing back all the time. And they're really beautifully, beautifully written books. They're, you know, they're detective stories. And I've been finding a real yearning in myself to see bad people brought to something like justice somewhere along the line, something, right?
You're late.
So those books have been very satisfying.
Okay.
And there's a shit ton of them. So, and actually he continues to weave, I'm sure a lot of the Russian history parts of it just go over my head, but they're very enjoyable. So, and that's the voice in that whole series belongs to that character, the Arkady Renko character. And it isn't like anybody else. It's, and I gather from, I had not known anything about Martin Crewe Smith, the writer, but he talked in one of the back matter in one of the books about how hard it was to get that first book published. And it became this, you know, enormous bestseller. And he had all these, you know, series of books based on this character, but nobody was really buying into it. So he said, fuck it. And basically bought himself out of his contract and went to someone else with it. And they recognized what they had and said, let's roll. And, you know, the rest is history. But again, whoever the first publisher who had it and passed on it, they weren't hearing their voice. They weren't seeing what made, they said, in fact, why is he a Russian guy? Why don't you make him an American? Americans don't want to read about Russians. He's like, No, it's kind of the whole point that he, you know, is working against corruption in the police department. And, you know, yeah, no, I can't do that. So goodbye. We must part. But that's a continuing voice. And that's interesting in a different way, right? Because the same person who wrote that first book is not the same person who wrote the last book. Same guy, different person. So very instructive, too, for another writer to see how he does this.
Wonder how that would play out now.
I can't imagine. I can't imagine. There's a book by, I read that too, by Masha Gessen, the journalist, about the band Pussy Riot. And it's called Words Will Break Cement. And she talks about their travails, you know, confronting Putin and what happened to them and what happened to their families and the internal strife in the band and who didn't want to do it anymore. And these, or like, you know, Navalny, all these people, it's very difficult to stand up to this shit because you have a family, you have people you care about, you have colleagues, you have whatever, and they can all be collateral damage.
Yeah. And
so you have all that on your back, right? So
I'm sure any of those are a very harrowing tale because, yeah, when it comes to things like that, you can play the martyr card and say, you know, do what you will to me, but they do typically go after family too. So
sure, because that's what I mean. I could say do what you will to me, but if you touch my fucking cats, you know, it's a whole different ball game, right? You don't come in my house and touch my cats, man. So yeah, but that's where you're vulnerable, right? Hostages to fortune. But well, that got really dark, didn't it?
Current events.
Right. Current events. Although we had a turn for the better today, and Hungary did a great thing for us all and stood up to that. So they are not invincible, and fighting back is a good thing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting how that all plays out. I don't know. The cynic in me I'm hopeful, but cautiously hopeful. You know what I mean?
Well, it's like, a good friend said this to me a long time ago. Unfortunately, she's dead now. Continuing our joyful theme. Yeah. But she had struggled with the disease on and off for many, many years. And we did talk about it and say, are you frustrated having to do this? And she said, you know, I know they can't cure this. I know it will never go away. But boy, every win counts. I thought, all right, every win, that makes sense. So we're happy today because every win counts, and every win takes us a little bit closer to where we want to be.
Yeah,
that is true. That is true.
One day at a time.
One day at a time. And this was a pretty big day. So, but besides that, I know it's really hard to have any conversation now because everything always circles back to that, or we hope that it does. I don't know a lot of people who don't pay attention to what's going on, but I know they're out there, so.
I don't pay any attention to any, but I'm definitely on the stay sane side of the fence. I am all the way on the stay informed side of the fence and not sane at all.
Yeah. Well, that sometimes was true before. Anyway.
Victor Orban lost, so there's some good news lately.
Yeah, that's what she's
and everybody about. Everybody has to take in, you know, and still function and do what you have to do, and that's a given. I mean, you have to still live your life no matter that history is happening, but you have to, and even working, I'm seeing so many friends who are trying to write, trying to edit their stuff, trying to make music, it's for some people, and I'm one of them, it is powerfully distracting to see all this stuff happening, and it does affect your process. So and then I have friends who say, well, I don't let it affect my process because then I feel like, well, then they're winning. You know, if they can stop me working, then they have won. So, but it is, living through history. Wow. That's why it's a curse, right? Interesting times.
Interesting times, yep.
I want boring times. Can we have the boring, uninteresting times back, please? Like a week.
I know, just a little bit, just enough to get a breather, right? That would be great. That would be
just
fine.
A little bit of peril.
Just enough to keep.
I like the way you phrase that, though. It's living through history. It's it's almost a positive way of spinning it, because it's like, you know, not living through this current tragedy and shitstorm every day. No, no, you're living through historical events that people are going to remember one day. Look at it that way.
Right. And that you can look at your own behavior and say, you know, how am I am just one little person, but is there a thing that I, like the teacher, you know, in the film saying, I'm just a guy, you know, I'm a guy with a video camera. What am I going to do about it? But he showed up within, you know, the parameters of that role, and he definitely did something about it. And
you do what you can.
Yeah.
And it, when I am upset or when I'm scared or whatever, notwithstanding everything I just said about nonfiction, but I do turn almost always to fiction to help, to say, either put me somewhere else so I can, or teach me something. And this bookshelf is full of books that I go to again and again and say, like Watership Down is one of my go-tos when the shit really hits the fan.
That's your comfort food, okay.
It's not, I wouldn't call it comforting, right? But it's in the same wheelhouse as saying, you know, it's this whole fable about, you know, community and oppression, and how do you meet that? You know, how do you, and you get to know all these, you know, all the rabbits and all the characters. And I don't think there's ever been an effective film yet made of Watership Down. I know many people were traumatized by the original one, and then there was a recent one where I was just appalled. So
yeah, I saw the I think it was a Netflix show. It was CGI, right? And it was the same story, so it was good, but the depiction of the rabbits wasn't as creepy, because it wasn't that rough edges original animated style. It was CG. It looked too clean.
Right. And it was, yeah, make them look cute. Make them look. Yeah. And they're not. They're little wild animals. You know, yeah. They're out living their life and doing their thing. And it's not the kind of story that should be sanitized anyway. It's about hard things and about meeting their history, right? Meeting their moment, meeting the things that happened to them. There's and what other book can teach you to curse in, you know, in rabbit language? Not another one that I know, but
I can't think of any other example of any books even having rabbit language.
That's something we could talk about. You brought up Little Bunny Fufu in your interview, and I don't think we spent much time talking about that, but I remember that being something that you wanted to talk about.
Little Bunny Fufu. All right, refresh me to our context.
That's going to bug me now, because I don't remember the full context, but it was something about, like, that was either your, not your favorite book, but, like, I remember you saying something along the lines, I'm going to butcher this, don't quote me exactly, but you're basically, like, saying that everything comes back to Little Bunny Fufu, but I don't remember exactly.
Little Bunny Fufu, wow, okay. See, that's what happens when you really start riffing on things and you start going going in places.
Well, it was also, like, 4 years ago, so I don't blame you if you don't remember.
Truth. I'm trying to think, where's the congruence? There's a bunny that I rescued from the devil, but that's a totally different story.
I think if I remember correctly, it has something to do with the symbology of what happens with that character.
Okay.
I'd have to go back and listen to the interview. But funny thing to say, one of the other things that we could do with these live chats is to suggest that people do go back and listen to the previous interviews that we've done with you.
And please, if you all find out what the significance of that was, let me know. Because
comment down below.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Drop a comment, because, yeah, I don't remember. There's a, right now in the book that I'm writing, this is called Shebang, and it has to do with humans and animals and revenge and the end of the world. And
you read a lot of animal stuff lately. Maybe throw in Animal Farm there while you're at it.
Oh, I was at a protest meeting and somebody yelled, "This is 1984. Read 1984." Yeah, it's about drones in our community. Our local county sheriff wants to introduce that, so people are pretty not liking that idea. So yeah, and someone said, 1984. No, the book that I'm writing now, at one point, one of the characters who, it's very unlikely that this person would have this kind of affinity, but they have a childhood, what am I going to say? A childhood attachment, or an attachment to a childhood object and story that is very surprising to the, it's like finding out that, I don't know, one of the, you know, that Dracula has like a little stuffy that he sleeps with, or, you know, it just really gives an insight into that particular character that I could not have done any other way.
It humanizes them.
And it more than humanizes them. It makes them us, because we all have a little, there's something like that in all of us, that a little touchstone, a little place, that a soft spot.
Bringing this back around to Frankenstein, when you mentioned that she starts the movie by breaking the fourth wall and being angry at people, I started smirking to myself because I wondered whether or not that, was she berating people about the thing about, you know, which one is the monster?
No, she was not.
They never came up.
No, it didn't. It didn't. It's, I thought that was an extremely bold choice to start this movie in the voice of
Mary Shelley,
because she is so peripheral to so many of the, you know, the tellings of this tale. And she's not peripheral. She wrote something that will live as long as there is English language and readers to read it.
Probably
or viewers to watch it. But to introduce her and to center her in the story, I thought was pretty brilliant. And she can carry that weight too.
And deserved.
Yes, and deserved. 100% deserved.
I don't think I've seen or heard of a rendition of Frankenstein that had Mary Shelley in it.
News to me. I'd never seen this before. And I thought, and for what she chooses to do with the material too, it's completely apt. So yeah, it's, if a voice is strong enough too, I will sit and listen to it. Whatever story you're telling me, I will sit there, unless you're a fucking Nazi. But besides that, I will sit and listen to it, just because you can tell it so well, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll believe it too. I'll just go along with you. Want to tell me this happens? I'll believe it. You want to tell me this is real? I'll believe it for as long as the story holds me.
Yeah, yeah.
Ask questions later.
Again, just the aspect of the voice speaking to you and the story being a conversation that engrosses you, no matter what is in that story. If you're locked in, go along with it. You're along for the ride.
And you're especially in, I think, the art form that comes closest to that really raw engagement is live performance, for starts. And puppetry, for me, is the one that is, it can be so stripped down, it could be almost nothing. Mm-hmm. And a good friend told me a story once of being in Japan watching a Bunraku puppetry show. And, you know, the puppeteers are visible, but they're all dressed in black. And they're doing, you know, and the puppets were small. And so they're doing this. And the puppets are having, terrible things are happening. And at one point, the puppeteer thrust their bare face into, like, the proscenium of the puppets. And people literally screamed because the world had become that, and all of a sudden this horrible monster, you know, I mean, it was part of the show, it was part of the narrative, but she said we had become, those people were invisible to us, and to have them intrude like that, to have this one person come in the narrative like that, scared the shit out of everybody.
Did they have like a black cowl on beforehand, or were their faces exposed the whole time, and they just, it was just that much, that good of a story?
No, they were, yeah, they were covered. I mean, they're covered. Okay, they're good. And also, you're not looking at them.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, you're looking at what's happening. And puppetry is such an immediate form, too. You really have to invest if it's going to work. And if it does work, it's seamless. For one of my books, Under the Poppy, there was a trilogy, I saw a lot of puppetry. I read a lot about puppetry. And I really, respected it like crazy as an art form. I hadn't known anything about it before then. And it's, and in fact, one of my favorite books, Ridley Walker, which is another one that basically, that's maybe one of the strongest voices ever. It just fucking dares you to either buy into this now or don't, because we have, it's a completely different language. It's an English that you've never heard before, and read it or don't. But if you do, and after about the first couple pages, it takes a second, but once you fall into the rhythm of it, then you're just off to the races. It's, I can't reach a copy. It's here, but I can't reach it. What's but it called again? Ridley Walker, okay, by Russell Hoban. And it truly is like nothing else I have ever read. And Russell Hoban, too, was really good at being able to take his own voice and use it for, he wrote a children's book, a chapter book called The Mouse and His Child, and it's about two clockwork mice, a daddy mouse and a baby mouse, and all they can do is turn on their clockwork, and the dad picks the baby up and puts him down, picks him up and puts him down. And it's this entire harrowing adventure story of what happens to these little clockwork toys and how they end up in a completely different situation. And but it's so dark and it's so funny, and he's so good. And on the first sight, you go, how could the person who wrote this also write this? But it's like, oh, because he's like a genius, and he is able to use his voice across genres. And but it's the same voice. You would, no matter what he does, I would read any book of Russell. I think I've got them all, but because it's that voice and you trust it, it's like, yeah, a really good curated, like a really good editor, really good you know, curated film series or whatever. Even if you don't know the story, or you don't know the voice, mm-hmm, or you don't know what you're going to see, you trust the voice, you trust that person that says you're gonna like this. Yeah. Everybody has one friend like that, right? Who really says you're gonna like this. And you, then you do, which is so great.
Okay, yeah, I've got my certain directors that, you know, no matter what film they're coming out with, I'm just like, I'm gonna watch it. It might be shit, but I've loved everything else, so I'm gonna watch it.
The better, and right, and just to see what are they doing now, what are they into, what do they like. Do you have writers like that that you really love that you're gonna go along with no matter what?
Not yet. I am not an avid reader, but I'm working on it. Mm-hmm. Or as far as film, yeah, it's Jeremy Saulnier. I'll watch anything that he makes. Mm-hmm. He's the guy who did Green Room, Blue Ruin, Hold the Dark.
Green Room is great. Yeah. I have seen Green Room. And that's another one. That's not like anything else.
No, it's very original. You don't see a lot of movies about young punks versus neo-Nazis.
And just the
not enough anyway.
The tightness of that filming, the how everything from a practical point of view, it's very, you know, hermetic, and very, everything just happens there.
Yeah, it's very isolated, which almost adds to the tension with the claustrophobia.
Yeah, makes it worse. No, that's brilliant.
Someone in chat is dropping Steve Graham Jones. I guess that is their person that they will follow.
That they'll read no matter what. What about you, Steve? Do you have somebody that you're ride or die for?
Joseph Campbell.
I just read a Joseph Campbell book.
Yeah,
he's not wrong. I was thinking fiction, but for nonfiction, I do like his stuff. I don't know about fiction. Because every author I can think of, there's been stuff that I've loved and then stuff that's been like hit or miss. Even like Poe. Mm-hmm. Like I've got the collected works of Poe. And there's some stuff that are page turners to me. And then there's other things where it's just like, oh, come on.
Right.
Same thing with Lovecraft. There are certain things that I really like, and then some things I'm like, eh. I don't know. I'm more picky, I guess.
I loved so many of Anne Rice's books and other books of hers. I just could not deal. But if she was here and still writing, I would keep reading them, because for the ones that hit, wow, did they hit, right? Mm-hmm. And you keep respecting that voice.
I was going to, there's a name, it's not horror, but, oh shit, what's the name? Not Terry Gilliam, what the hell's his name?
Terry Pratchett?
Yes, thank Pratchett. You. Well, wait, no. Was that who did Hitchhiker's Guide?
I think so.
No, that was Douglas Adams.
No, Douglas Adams.
Douglas Adams.
Yes. I'll put Douglas Adams in that category. I've liked every single thing of his that I've read.
And that's really rare, I think, too, to be able to find someone. Because that, especially if everything has hit you, then it's like you two are operating, you know, for 100% on the same wavelength. But even someone that you, at least someone you can trust creatively and go, I may not love everything you do. And I mean, this just came out earlier this year, another edition of The Cipher. And there are people who this was formative for them, and this is always what they want from me. And then there are people who read this that came out last year and said, oh, you write horror novels too? I said, I write a lot of things. And
it's got to be versatile.
I tend to go where my interests are or what seems to be like the next thing. I mean, I wrote 7 YA novels because I wanted to, and they were great. They
do
were
what great. You want to do at the time. Don't like pigeonhole yourself into just being a horror writer. If you're in the mood to write YA, then yeah, don't force.
Or a horror reader, any kind of, you know, when that's the one thing that scares me about any genre, and, you know, certainly it's not exclusive to horror, but people who only read within their genre that they love the most, I think they risk cutting themselves off from things that would enrich that reading.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we only have so much time. I mean. Yeah.
Speaking of, we're under the 15-minute mark, so spend a little time talking about what you're currently working on that we want to promote.
I do. There's a good segue, too. Actually, the book that I'm writing now is called Shebang. It will be out next January from Meerkat Press, and it is very much about the uses and abuses of power and what happens when you try to make a space for yourself within a system that doesn't want to allow you space. And it's about the power between that humans generally have to exercise over what we like to call the natural world.
Topical and empowering. I like it.
And I'm a big animal person. I volunteer for different animal rights groups, and mm-hmm. I've always been a huge animal person. So it hits a lot of those spots for me. And I think the voice is very different for me, so I'll be very interested to see what people make of it. But I'm having a good though harrowing time getting it done every day in our current shit show. But on the other hand, I got to go to a rescue farm and meet some goats, and because there's a goat in this story, he was super cool. And I got to meet goats and talk to people who work with them. And one of the volunteers said, they're kind of like taller cats because they're going to do what they're going to do. And if you're not going to herd, you know, I mean, they're going to do what they do. And you need to enter into their way of thinking before you can ask them to do anything. If you try to force them, it will be, it's bad news. And you shouldn't do that. But like if you scare a flock of sheep, they'll all run together. If you scare goats, they all separate. Scatter. They go wherever they go, right?
Or they faint.
No, fade. That's a specific kind
of goat that
faints. They don't all faint. They do a lot of things, and there a lot of things are done to them. So that was a harrowing thing to learn about too. And I am sad and sorry to sit here and tell you that there is still human beings who commit animal sacrifice for their religions. I am sorry if that is your religion. I respect people's need to believe, but that stops when it cuts off an animal's head for me. We're done. So I had to do a lot of reading about that, and that was grimmer than all the fascism put together, let me tell you. So
one of the reasons there's a website called Does the Dog Die?
Oh, and yeah.
Do people die in this movie?
Oh, 100%. I look at that for every fucking movie I watch. Mm-hmm. I cannot watch things.
Yeah, what was it? You mentioned the Lars von Trier show, The Kingdom, and I was like scrolling through the pictures on IMDb and I'm like, oh, that's a dead dog.
No,
oh.
It's okay. It's okay. I will say that.
You will spoil it that. It's okay. Nice. The dog is okay.
It is okay to watch it. It's okay to watch it. The before we run out of time, another wreck of an animal film I loved is the animated film called Flo about a cat and some other animals that won the Oscar a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. It is one of the best films I've ever seen about animals, and no dialogue whatsoever. The animals are not like adorable or like, you know, cute and funny, and it's
no
just
dialogue at all. It's just
zero. It's the animals. It's and it is so. There are parts that are so tense that I watched it sitting like bolt upright because.
Oh yes.
Oh, it's fucking brilliant.
In the suggestions.
It's so brilliant. Watch it, and you will not be sorry. As an animal person, no, you will. You as any person, as a person who loves film, and that's the kind of thing that you look at and go. If someone had said, let's make a movie about these animals in a flood, people would be like, wait, what now? My husband found it and said, just watch this. I'm not going to tell you anything about it. Just watch
it. Going blind once again.
Oh, it was the best. So, yes, you can't go wrong with Flo. Mm-hmm. And it takes us almost back to the beginning. Go watch The Bride and watch Flo and read mystery novels and read about goats.
On Fridays, we have a wild card sort of event on our Discord server where Chris streams whatever it is that he wants, and we just wrapped up streaming a brand new cherry flavor, so The Kingdom might be a good option to pick up. And also at 9 o'clock here on Sundays, after we wrap up with this, Chris hosts a drawing party where he streams himself working on his horror-themed webcomic.
Nice, fun.
So we've got plenty of stuff to look forward to. And as for following up with you, if anybody does want to check out the previous interview that we did, if you go to horrormixeshappy.com and go to the episodes page, scroll down till you find Kathy's name, click on that. That'll take you to her bio page, and there's a player there that'll have the full interview that we did with her about 2-3 years ago.
And legit, do the bunny foo-foo thing and tell us all what it was about.
Yes, once again, if you listen to it and you know what the bunny foo-foo thing is, comment down below.
I know it's going to bother me.
It must have been near the end because I listened to about like 75-80% of it before the call today.
If you tell me
little bunny foo-foo, I'll send you a fun hole button from Getting Press because I really need to know it. I don't have time to go back and listen to myself, which I don't do anyway. But this was super fun. Thank you for having me back. And I hope all is well with Kitty.
I'm sure he's fine.
Okay. All right.
Join us again whenever you want.
All right. Cool beans.
Have a good night.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.